What's up, everybody? This is Healing Intentions, and I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. This podcast is about natural health and wellness, mental health, cannabis, psychedelics, philosophy, and spirituality. Today, my guests are Drs. Alex Orton and Colby Orta. Alex and Colby are the owners and founders of Haven Holistic Health, located in downtown Chicago. They are passionate about educating and empowering the world, their community, and their patients about the innate healing capability of the body. They specialize in treating individuals with chronic digestive complaints who have tried every other diet, treatment, or therapy, and still are not getting the results they deserve. Anybody, whether in Chicago or across the globe, can schedule a free 20-minute consultation with one of the doctors at havenholistichealth.com or check them out on Instagram at havenchicago or Facebook at Haven, a holistic health center. Let's get started. All right. Awesome. Welcome, Dr. Alex, Dr. Colby. Thanks for coming. So glad to have you guys here.
Awesome, man. We had a great time hanging out last night. So happy to be here.
Yeah, man. Yeah, this is long time coming. I know I've known you for a few years now from we became friends at National at school. And then you became my ND intern in the clinic. And we went on quite a journey together. And ever since then, we've stayed in touch. And I'm just graduating from the ND right now. So it's just wonderful timing. This is beautiful. Thanks a lot for being here.
For sure, man. Absolutely.
So just want to start by kind of checking in. Got this from Dr. Charlie Cropley and from you. You did this with me in the clinic. Just three words, kind of how you're feeling right now. Three words, kind of sum it up.
I'm feeling very invigorated. Once you click record, it's just like, you know, you really get in tune, right? Mm-hmm. Very inspired. And a little bit stressed just with some of the stuff that we have on our plate currently. Mm. Just with, you know, finishing everything up.
Sure. Yep. What about you, Colby?
I'm feeling aware, thoughtful, and motivated.
Love that. Wonderful way to start. I'm feeling super excited. I'm definitely feeling nervous, but it's like a good nervous energy, you know, and I'm feeling just relieved being done with everything, with school and with my board exams and with, you know, figuring out what's going on in the world right now and just like step at a time. You know, I heard Aubrey Marcus say, you don't have to have it all figured out all at once. Just know the next best step and then just do that. And so I'm really trying to live by that and just being in the present moment, you know, because you get this anxiety if you think too much about the future may never come. You have to be in the present. If you get too stuck in the past, you can, you know, lead towards depression and thinking, oh, why didn't it go this way? Oh, why did this happen? Present moment.
I mean, I can't think of a better time to apply that principle than right now when everything just feels so unknown. It's like, you know, a spiritual perspective on what's happening that I've heard that I really resonate with is like the world needed at some level to experience some sort of a shift. Mm. And even though it's a little messy and people are freaking out a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of the larger consciousness of, you know, what we all need to move towards. And it really makes you have to be present because we really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you say that too, is that our business coaches always say when you're paralyzed, which happens a lot, especially when you're trying to start your own thing, because there's just lofty expectations that you apply to yourself and your business. When you're feeling paralyzed, the best thing you can do is take the first and most rational step forward. So mm-hmm. just focus on that first step. Okay, I have this big project I want to accomplish. I have this big aspiration I want to do. Instead of trying to focus on the long-term aspiration, focus on the first step you can take to potentially put you on that path. Right. So when you start to take those steps, the momentum starts to roll, you get in a rhythm, a groove, and then it's much easier to reach those aspirations rather than just focusing on this large esoteric goal that you, what possibly is that?
Yep. You start, you meet this guy who knows this lady, and then they direct you to this person, and they say, yeah, I know this person looking to do this, and magic happens. That's beautiful. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about there in the business world. We'll put a bookmark in that.
There'll be a lot of bookmarks, I think.
We might not get to all of them, but there's plenty of podcasts to go. So tell me about Haven and the whole Haven story and your guys' path, all of this, and kind of what led you to this point today here.
Do you want the short version or the long version?
The long version, baby.
So it actually starts back when I was 5 and Alex was 6.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's go there.
So Alex and I are both from the same suburb here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. There's crazy pictures in our office that I always smile when I check out. And it's interesting how many patients ask me about them, is that there's a picture of 1997 and 1998 Clarendon Hills Little League.
Wow.
Alex's dad's a coach and my dad's a coach, and Alex and I are both on the team, which is crazy thing about.
Amazing.
I'll kind of give that history, and you can kind of talk about the business history. How's that sound? So I originally was kind of always interested in this path to a certain degree, and my dad ended up having a second career change and going to chiropractic school, and he graduated at National when he was 52, I believe.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Amazing.
I can't believe what I experienced, that he experienced something similar. Like, props to him. But anyway, she kind of introduced me to school. I was really into it, been kind of on the medical path for a while. Had another practitioner that I saw, Dr. Spates. I don't know if you ever has heard.
So I remember you mentioning him though, at the very first ILAMP when we went down to Springfield.
Yeah.
And I remember.
Yeah.
I remember it.
Wow, that's a trip.
Yeah. I wasn't even a student yet then.
Wow.
And I just was like, I'm going to go down to Springfield and check this stuff out.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So then when I chose to go to school, Alex saw my dad at the bank, and my dad shared with him what I was doing, what he was doing, so on and so forth. So I think that inspired Alex, and I'll let him share more about his own personal story, but that inspired him, I think, to attend school. And then crazy enough, in the world that be, the timing worked out where we started the program at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. From my perspective, I had a really interesting college experience. You know, I was exposed to way more than I had been in the little bubble that I felt like I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, right?
Mm-hmm. Where'd you go to college?
A couple places, but The first place I went was Wabash College in Indiana, all guys school.
Oh, wow.
900 men in the middle of Indiana.
Huh.
Pretty wild experience.
That must be.
I will say.
A lot of testosterone.
Yeah. Like wrestling matches in the fraternity on Friday nights, you know. it was a great experience. But, you know, it really just opened my perspective up. And I guess it taught me things about myself that I didn't know were there, right? And I was reading about philosophy and really expanding my consciousness at some level, messing around with drugs. And I, you know, things got chaotic for me and basically just kind of lost perspective of what I was doing. So like had a rock bottom moment for sure for a while, where I was having panic attacks and a bunch of drama happened like with my friend group. So it felt very like disorienting and, you know, crazy experience. And I ended up coming home. I told my dad, I was like, Dad, you got to come pick me up.
Wow.
And he was like, at first he was like, there's no way, you know, like you got to stay in school.
Yeah.
And 3 days later, he drove down and picked me up.
Wow.
So he, you know, he totally had my back, came home, got my shit together. And it took me a while. I went to community college at COD, College of DuPage.
Yep.
And I took a biology class, and the woman who was teaching the course was the first one to describe to me the idea of monocropping corn, mm-hmm. and the biodiversity of the prairie, and how the root systems would go down like 12 meters underground.
Whoa.
Right? To super stabilize the soil and to like soak up all the little bits of water. So it was extremely stable and diverse. And, you know, corn roots go down like 6 inches and cause like crazy erosion. And I actually had the feeling in that class, like, if we don't change, we're going to starve.
Mm.
That was like my direct realization. And it was the first time something actually hit me that I cared about that much. And I ended up going through a whole series of paths to get to Colorado and found, you know, natural medicine and spirituality. I started meditating a bunch.
Mm.
And as Colby said, like, you know, it was just serendipitous. I ran into his dad and here we are.
Wow, man. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Story just blew my mind. Incredible. Yeah.
And then I think how Haven got started, which I think is another pretty cool story that I don't know we've shared that much as well, is that when I remember sitting in class, especially as your last trimesters of school, they always ask like, who's going to stay in the state? Who's going to move? And so on and so forth. And I was always like, well, I'm probably going to stay. And Alex would be like, there's no way in hell I'm staying in Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting the hell out of here as fast as possible.
Yeah.
What happened was we both were able to go to the True North Water Fasting Clinic out on the West Coast.
Yeah. Northern California. Yeah.
Yeah. And we always thought about the way, I think that we had many similar interests in school. We never spent that much time potentially talking about how you actually treat patients. Because as you understand, but especially in the alternative healthcare field, there is a wide spectrum of how you can treat patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I think depending on the patient, all that, it all can be used towards patient's advantage and towards your advantage as a practitioner. But
right.
Alex and I are very purist in how we approach the way that we want to approach, you know, treating patients. Yeah. And when we were spending out time in California, our personalities also clicked in terms of we understood we were on the same page seeing patients, but we also were spontaneous, wanted a similar path. We definitely approach life and want to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of we're like, well, we have an opportunity where the world's kind of communicating to us in a broader whole, I would say, that there's a huge opportunity here.
Yep.
And so instead of letting that pass by, if we take advantage of that, it'd be a real possibility. And there were definitely some steps in there.
Mm-hmm.
Alex almost did a residency in Ohio. We kind of got, you know, decided at some point we're going to work together. And that's why we started Haven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how long has that been going now?
About 2 years.
Wow.
About 2 years. Yeah.
And so tell me a little bit more about some of your philosophy, some of your therapeutic modalities, what you guys get into. I know it, like you said, you're purist. What does that mean exactly to people?
So I was actually just listening to your previous podcast on the way over here. Mm-hmm. And you said a quote from Steve Jobs. Simplicity is the greatest sophistication.
The ultimate sophistication.
Sophistication. Mm-hmm. And I would say that could almost summarize our philosophy in a nutshell.
Love it.
You know, the body is capable of doing incredible things. And so much of self-healing is just about stepping out of the body's way and trusting the process, mm-hmm. trusting nature. And B, becoming conscious and aware of what you need from any moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's been really cool to kind of see the evolution of Haven for, you know, in Colby and I's personal lives, and then how that's affected our treatment of patients. Because the more time that's passed, and even just this 2 years, you know, the more we are going down the path of just becoming conscious in every part of your life that you can.
Mm-hmm.
And if you become conscious in the way that you move, the way that you breathe, the food that you eat, you really pay attention to the way the food makes you feel and the experience of eating. You pay attention to your thoughts and your dreams, your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Then things just align naturally because you're listening to nature and what it's communicating to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds so simple. It's like, why would you go somewhere and like pay money for that?
it's simple, but I'm tingling. So there's a reason why. and you know, goosebumps and like, you're connected with nature, man. You're in flow. You're connected with source. Whatever words you want to say, you're aligned. You're just going down the right path with the right, you know, intention.
Yep.
And amazing things can happen.
Yeah. And I would say that one thing that I think we communicate to patients a lot, which is also unique, is that our goal as practitioners is to have you get to a certain point on your health journey where you never have to see us again.
There you go.
And yeah. That's the ultimate form of health, is that the person is so educated and empowered, they know exactly what to eat.
Yep.
But more importantly, then they know how supplements make them feel. They know different techniques that we've educated them. If they, you know, they get acutely ill or something mm-hmm. happens to them, they have all of those skills that we've educated on
yep.
them on, so that they can utilize those skills, education, that empowerment in their own life.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the ultimate form of healing. And the only way you can get down that path is if you create awareness around everything that you do.
Yeah.
It's almost the same process of like, you know, a really good rule of thumb as to whether the treatment that you're taking or doing is getting to the root cause or not, is whether once you stop it, the effects are still there. Right?
Right.
Because if you're addressing the root, then you're fundamentally correcting that imbalance and you're fundamentally changing. You're going for a cure.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, drugs are often, they're not curative. They're meant to create stability in an imbalanced system, which is oftentimes needed.
Right.
Right. So it creates immediate stability, but it's not curative. And everyone knows that drugs aren't curative.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with supplements that you take. You stop taking a supplement, like melatonin is a great example. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I didn't sleep well because I didn't have my melatonin. It's like, well, that's not curative.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same concept as taking a medication where you're, it's, of course, there's not as many side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And you could say the same about going to a doctor's office too. Like we will get patients who say, oh yeah, when I was going to that clinic, I felt great. It's like, do you feel good now? It's like, well, no.
Mm-hmm. You become dependent on, I go in every week and they make me feel good. And then you need to go in every week then for forever.
Right.
Or, you know.
So when you fundamentally empower and create consciousness around the way that you're treating your body in a moment-to-moment basis,
mm-hmm.
then that has real deep root cause effects.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. It's all about getting to the root cause instead of just managing symptoms, you know, and creating a very profitable customer forever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we find, is that many of our patients come from the alternative healthcare clinics in Chicago.
Mm.
I don't know the exact percentage, but I would say over half, if not more.
Okay.
So, you know, I think there's some really good alternative healthcare clinics in Chicago that are doing good things, but the majority of our patients come from those clinics.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already tried everything, you know, and they're like, well, I'm still not getting results. I'm like, well, let's actually think about your lifestyle. So most alternative practitioners don't even spend time thinking about actual lifestyle changes. Let's go over your supplements. Let's go over your intolerances. Let's go over your patterns, so on and so forth. So when mm-hmm. you actually start to open up those questions and take a look inside someone's actual life, I think you find that there's plenty of opportunity even in our own lives that we can still improve on.
Oh yeah.
So that's a constant evolution in your healing journey.
Mm-hmm.
Peel back one layer of the onion and then there's a nice, ripe, juicy layer that's ready to be dove into.
Yeah. Yeah. Layers. I think the rapper Meek Mill said there's layers to this shit, and literally like it's so deep but true. Like there's so many layers, it goes deeper and deeper into the subconscious mind, which I know is a very favorite topic of ours. And you know, how do you get to that subconscious mind?
Mm-hmm.
There's many tools, right? Talk therapy is one, but it can take years of talking and getting comfortable and getting deeper and deeper and deeper. But there's other methods such as holistic counseling, Dr. Moshe, Daniel mm-hmm. Block. There's, you know, psychedelic therapy. There's breath work. There's meditation. There's cold exposure therapy. I mean, it goes on and on and
Dream analysis.
Yep.
My personal favorite. Yeah.
But I would actually argue, in my honest opinion, is which is what Dr. Moshe talks about as well, is that CBT, meaning cognitive behavioral therapy, is actually many times suppressive for the patient.
Yeah.
Similar to chiropractic as well, I would say, and that many individuals, well, if I don't get adjusted this week, I don't feel like myself. Mm. If I don't go see my therapist, my week's going to be off. So then they're dependent on somebody else to get the results that they want in their own healing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a bit suppressive.
An external force.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No matter what we do in our life, even if we think it's positive for us, have we taken the approach and the look at like, am I dependent on that? So we tell all of our patients, you should never use supplements as a dependency. If I don't take my digestive enzymes, I get bloated.
Right.
Well, they haven't fixed the bloating.
Right.
The bloating is still there. So it's not your enzymes. You aren't deficient in enzymes.
Right.
Your enzymes are suppressing the body's actual communication with you that something's wrong when you eat some food. And it's across the board. And I think we take that approach. And I think we're really passionate about that, is that there's time and place for everything.
Right.
So at time, what I just spoke about, you need that at certain points of the healing process. But if you aren't trying to fundamentally transform the individual in their health journey, you're missing a huge piece of the puzzle, if not the biggest piece.
Right. Exactly.
I would add to this whole conversation too, that, you know, different people are at different parts of their journey.
Yep.
And depending on where your consciousness is at and what your goals are,
yep,
then, you know, what we're talking about may not resonate.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
But we do feel as if there's a lot of people who have a deep yearning for truth, and feel as if there's a deeper way to heal themselves than what they've received, you know? And sometimes it's not a fully formed idea, just like, you know, someone will call into the office and you get the sense that they, like, you know, they've done a lot of things in their health journey. They've come a long way, but it's like, we're still not getting to the deepest, that deeper spot.
Something's missing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in Colby and I's perspective, it sounds like you as well, for sure, Adrian.
Definitely.
Just the, you know, understanding how you are whole and you are capable of self-healing, which is the you know, foundational idea behind Moshe's work, holistic counseling, where you have false belief systems that basically cut off the vital force from actually inhabiting your body and healing.
Right.
Which sounds really far out, but it makes so much sense, because if you have false belief systems, that drives your decision-making.
Yep.
That pulls you out of the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
That makes you not capable of actually listening to what the body's saying to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you actually develop patterns that are dysfunctional. So by understanding the unconscious and becoming aware of the way that these different parts of our day affect us, then I mean, deeply transformative.
Wow. Yeah, that just brought up like 40 different thoughts. I can't even keep track of them all, but yeah, man, I mean, well said. And it's a journey, and you know, it's like you have to be kind and you know, compassionate with yourself and with others along the journey, because like you said, some people are not there yet. They're not ready, and that's okay. You know, like Dr. Jim Sensenig says on the Vital Conversation, I've been going back and listening to all of them. Shout out Naturopathic Medicine Institute for that, and the Vitalist, you know, training that is just so, so important, I think. he says there are no incurable diseases. There are only incurable patients.
Mm-hmm. And the real tough pill to swallow with that is, you know, since we're all in the naturopathic profession, we have to take that message so seriously.
Yeah.
And I really believe that. It's like, you know, Colby and I have continuously over the past 2 years being out of school, have gone through ups and downs, of course, the natural ups and downs of life and getting the business off the ground and getting the word out to people. And it's fascinating how any obstacle that we've experienced goes back to our own patterns, our own belief systems, our own lives, and what we're doing or not doing. Mm. And when things are aligned, then it's like aligned on so many levels, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's the wonderful thing about being in this profession is that you have to take that so seriously. And I mean, it's a wonderful journey. It's intimidating because you're stepping into the unknown, but right. It's a beautiful journey.
That's one of the questions I had is, do your own issues come up when you're working with people, with patients, and, you know, it limits to how far you can go with them because you haven't gone there yet yourself, kind of thing, you know? You can only help someone as far as you've helped yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a very good perspective. I'm sure it has in a subconscious way, but I know that the path that Alex and I have been on from the start is that if you aren't healing yourself constantly, then it's going to be a challenged journey to help heal other people.
Right.
And yep. I think that's something, especially when you're in school, and school's such a sympathetic overdrive, such a let's get this done in this amount of time. Let's just crush.
Right.
In an ideal world, the school program would actually be centered and catered to how can we heal all the students?
Yes.
So that we can be in the most educated and most healed state to help the world.
Beautiful. So spot on. I agree 100%.
But again, I mean, that's not, it's hard because it's not a cultural part of our aspect. So I understand there's funding and you can go and all the political process take place, which again, those are there for a purpose too. Mm-hmm. So you got to constantly balance the feminine and masculine, the yin and the yang. You have mm-hmm. to be very aware of that whole process because it's part of life. If you're only looking at one side of it, then the other side is going to needs to shed light on the darkness, right?
Yep.
I would add too about the, like, you know, learning from our patients, or if mm-hmm. we ever experience a patient that, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, we haven't even gone that far yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've definitely been intimidated by some of my patients who are like, yeah, I've been on ayahuasca retreats. I like water fast every uh-huh. month. I'm like, dude, you're doing more than I am.
Same with me for that matter. So yeah. I hear you on that
one. Yeah. But the cool thing I think about, you know, about self-healing, if you really take that idea seriously, is there's no hierarchy.
Right.
Like that idea is like, you know, as far as consciousness is concerned, and waking up and healing is not a thing. So mm-hmm. everyone has their own path. And what I'm trying to do in my life, which is always challenging because of course, like, you know, when I'm the doctor who's helping a patient, mm-hmm. there's a certain idea of an authority or,
right.
you know, like, or at least a leader. But to be vulnerable with my patients and my community and really just open up and allow people to see me for who I am mm-hmm. so that we're taking down the barriers of thinking that, like, we have some secret answer that you don't have.
Right.
Right. And
exactly.
how we're all working through it. That's a really cool process. And that's one of the reasons why most people call us by our first names only. And we try to create that environment of, you know, it being a process where we are discovering together, so to speak.
We're peers on this journey.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not above you in some way. It's like we're equal mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Yeah. So tell me more about some of the specific therapies you guys are into, if you don't mind sharing, like, some of the, you know, diagnostics, some of the therapies, like, what are some of your favorites? I just love hearing about nature cure life. Mm-hmm.
Wow. We could talk about so much that we've gotten into in the last year.
I would say that there's, I'll talk about like the bulk of our practice, like what the majority of patients who come in our practice, what type of therapies we experience. Mm-hmm. One of the most effective therapies that we do is the food intolerance mm-hmm. evaluation, which is one of the most profound therapies that we do and get some of the best results. And it's basically mm-hmm. everybody's born with a food that they're intolerant to. So when you cut out that food, it allows the digestive tract to heal and it allows your body to stop absorbing the toxins that are in there from the food that you're ingesting that you're intolerant to. Mm-hmm. So historically, what have we called that? Toxemia.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yoo-hoo.
Right.
Like, you know, that book was written by Tilden, in 1926? It was crazy. So that's one of the main tools that we use. We also use a lot of different, whether it be herbs or supplements, like standard process. So we're really avid on using as best as we can whole food supplements. We do a lot of homeopathy in our practice. That's a big important tool. We do a lot of drainage in our practice. And then one of the most profound things that we do, I think, is also similar to the intolerance, is that we fundamentally transform our patient's life by focusing on all of the determinants of health. So again, we found that many, many practitioners weren't actually touching on the type of water you should drink. How are you communicating with the world? Are you breathing properly? Are you moving your body appropriately? What's your experience with light and sun? What's your experience with lights in your home? What's your experience with the air in your home? And those are just a few of the topics that we cover. But when you have someone eat clean food and they clean up the toxins they're being exposed to, you take a few supplements to support the organs that need support, you get some pretty good results.
That's amazing. Yeah, how about EMFs in there too? I know that's a big topic, and just energy in general, and Tesla and Abrams and
I mean, the thing, and I've learned a lot from Colby about this whole field in the last couple months, but I think the technologies and perspectives and practices that we're most attracted to are the ones that look at the body as an electrical being, as an electrical field, which makes perfect sense if anyone thinks about it logically, because we're at least 60% water, and the physiological action that's affecting our bodies most, like systemically, is the nervous system, which is electricity. So there's electricity that's just flowing through water, and we know through the work of Gerald Pollack that that water that fills our entire body is like a gel. It's structured water, so it's in between the phase of liquid and solid. So it's like this gel,
The fourth phase of water.
the fourth phase of water, and it's all organized in kind of a crystalline or, a certain geometric pattern that creates this continuity and integrity that allows information to be passed from one part of the body to the other almost instantaneously. And, since we're an electrical being, we need to essentially recharge our system, which sounds far out, but it makes sense with just simple things like having deep breathing, tapping into like really deep breath and really optimizing your oxygen, carbon dioxide, getting out in the sun, and literally just I mean, there's incredible books written about the energy that you just absorb directly from the sun. Not it's not it's like beyond vitamin D,
Way beyond vitamin D,
way beyond restructuring the physio the water and used for energy, grounding, eating raw food and traditional fats, and high amounts of minerals to charge the system, and then all the various electrical technologies. The food intolerance evaluation, for example, is tapping into that electrical field. It's coming from technology that was developed, in the 1800s with Nikola Tesla. And all of the cool technologies that are developing in Russia and Germany and other places, particularly Russia, is tapping into that field. It's a whole new kind of, it's not new. It's an underground physics. It's the same kind of concept that naturopathic medicine and vitalism is kind of like the black sheep, where you're tapping into something that's really different, right? And it's not taught in conventional schools. We're seeing that through the naturopathic, the naturopathic medical schools are dropping that vitalistic teaching for the most part. And this is the same in a much larger physics concept, where there's, the reason why Tesla's work was destroyed was because it completely shook up the mainstream dogma, which would, if people accept that, it means you have to rewrite all the textbooks, right? And to go through a paradigm shift like that is really challenging.
Well, and I would say, to take it one step further, why his stuff was really suppressed is that he was able to run cars without oil and power complete cities without any sort of energy, because the energy they tapped into was directly from the sun.
Yeah.
So then all of the powers that be that controlled all of the oil companies were like, whoa, like we can't have this.
Yeah. Rockefellers and the Edisons, and they're like, oh, no.
See ya. Yep. Yeah. So that's, of course, it always goes back to funding.
Right. Follow the money.
I always say that.
Follow the money. And you know, that's why I love Elon Musk right now and what he's been doing, why he named his company Tesla. You know, I'm just a big fan of him, because he's trying to really, change the paradigm with oil to electric, solar, and, getting us to space and all of that. But, my big vision and dream, which I told you before, I'm putting it out there, is getting him on our side with natural medicine and getting him to start, like the Rockefellers did back in the 1900s with Flexner Report and all of that,
sure.
To change the medical education system. We can do that with somebody like Elon Musk on our side, sure. And changing that paradigm and going after big pharma and the insurance companies. I just think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that Klinghardt actually spoke with him, I think a month and a half ago.
Oh.
Because he, with the SpaceX, he's actually going to launch 6,000 5G towers that are coming from space.
Yeah.
So, whoa.
Yeah, I heard about that too.
Rudolf Steiner said in the 1910s, right? Is that the dawn of the individual's consciousness and spiritual connection as technology gets more advanced, and the smog basically of the world is hindered, then individual's consciousness and spirituality will not be able to fully develop the way that it can.
Mm-hmm.
And that was right basically at the dawn of when everybody had first access to this technology. And now look what's happening now. You're watching family out to eat, and the two kids are on their phone. The mom and dad aren't talking because they're literally on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a terrible experience.
It's so true. And like Gary V says on Instagram, I follow him, and he's this, early investor in Facebook and Instagram. He's fully into social media, and he says that it's like, I lost my train of thought.
It happens sometimes. Gary V.
Yeah, Gary V. And he said about social media, and he's like, you can judge it. He's like, it's out there, and you cannot agree with it. But he's like, but it's the reality. Like I said, when I was over, see things as how they are, not how you want them to be.
Yep.
And that's exactly, I think it's a hard reality. I'm with you. I'm like, I can't help but to not judge it sometimes. I'm like, dang, they're not even talking to each other like at all.
Sure.
Like for 20 minutes, they haven't talked to each other. I'm like, and they're out to dinner and whatever. But that's the reality. And so Gary Vee is like, if you're going to be in this world and business, you have to be on social media. Like it's just the reality. If you're not, you're missing this huge, outlet to people that,
I mean, that's the yin and the yang, right?
Right.
It's like, it's really interesting to work within a system that needs to be changed, but working within it as well and mm-hmm. finding that dance.
Right.
And I totally resonate with that concept of like, it is as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Accept things for what they are.
Right.
I've been really getting into Eckhart Tolle.
Mm-hmm.
In the last couple months, because with all the crazy chaos going on with the current world events,
mm-hmm.
Like we said, everything is unknown, and I felt a big stress about everything that's going on, which I didn't realize that I had in me. But then mm-hmm. I was getting all emotional, like mm-hmm. having debates with people,
mm-hmm.
Getting upset, spending way too much time on social media.
Mm-hmm. Getting charged up.
Yeah. Exactly. And I've witnessed that everyone is so polarized and at each other's throats. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's everyone. I think the extremes though are very loud right now on all sides of
coming very apparent. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I took a step back and started listening to Eckhart Tolle again, and again, going back to the idea of simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. Mm-hmm. Like his message is so simple, it's almost impossible for the mind to even grasp
mm-hmm.
because the mind wants to add more to it. But his message is so simple. And then he has thousands of hours of lectures describing the same thing.
For thousands of hours.
Thousands of hours.
Clearly pretty complex, yet simple.
Exactly. And people are asking him questions, all sorts of questions about, you know, I have to euthanize my pet. When's the best time to euthanize my pet? Mm. I have this person at work who's like really just like really upsetting me and I just don't know what to do about it. And he listens and he gives him some perspective, but it all, the message is you continuously return back to the now. Mm-hmm. And not like conceptually return back. Like, oh yeah, I'm meditating. Like, oh, wait, we're in the now. It's like, no, feel what's happening right now. Like in your body, feel what's happening in your body. See what's happening all around you, right? And of course, things are going to happen that you know, your ego doesn't like or obstacles, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he said the thing that you do continuously when you're in the present moment and you're practicing that spirituality is just accept what's happening. You say thank you. You literally say thank you. And whatever it is, you just fully accept it. And that's such a far out concept. And there's so many ways that we don't accept. Mm-hmm. By labeling, judging, creating theories, conceptualizations, getting upset emotionally, eating.
Right.
There's a million ways that we don't just stay right there and accept. And I can feel this. Everyone has kind of their own triggers. And this is the unconscious, right? These are like mm-hmm. projections and your triggers. And when that happens, that is the real work. Like that's Pema Chodron's message.
Yep.
You know, about when things fall apart. Mm-hmm. Alan Watts wrote a book, The Wisdom of Insecurity, right? Eckhart said, like, life is meant, like, the purpose of life is for there to be challenges for you so that they continuously wake you up. Mm. So it's, I know that was a bit of a tangent, but sometimes when things feel so out of our control, like Elon Musk is going to put up 600,000
right.
5G satellites. How is that going to affect us?
Right.
You know, like that's a huge unknown and that's scary, but accepting it as it is a really deep practice. And mm-hmm. that's been it. I know in my own life in the last couple months, it's been a godsend. I mean, it's been amazing. And to actually feel the present moment, it's so peaceful. It's so peaceful.
Yep.
It's an incredible place to be.
Yeah. It's where it's all happening right now. That's it. Right now.
That's it. And it's a really easy practice is to just be like, is everything right now okay? Mm-hmm. And you could even do that if you're thrown in prison. You're like, you're in your body. You're sitting on the little wooden bench. And you're like, okay, this moment right now, am I okay? It's like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm sitting here. You know?
Oh, yeah.
But, of course, we have so much of the story and the guilt and the revenge and the
shame and the...
They all get tied up into it, and that's all just ideas in our mind that are false belief systems, Moshe, right? Mm-hmm. False belief systems that are leading to an emotional reaction that mm-hmm. then lead to a physical reaction. Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah, right. When that happens chronically, time and time again, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. Your emotions are going to follow, and your body's going to follow, and your body's not going to be good enough. And then you're going to have some kind of chronic disease. How does that not make sense? You know,
well, I think that's kind of to paint some other picture is that healing, true healing is a very simple concept,
right?
But like any concept that resonates truth in the world, they're the easiest concepts to understand, some of the most challenging concepts to implement in your life, mm-hmm. whether that be healing, whether that be creating awareness, mindfulness, like, again, there's truth behind all of those. So the concept of healing isn't that challenging.
Right.
up the mountain is going to be challenges, adversity, and all of those things that are only going to make you stronger. Mm-hmm. So you can shy away from those, or you can embrace those to overcome that adversity, which is what humans are supposed to do.
Right.
Life is suffering. So we have to suffer to become, to have the health we want, to have the awareness that we create. Mm-hmm. That's the healing journey. And that's why life is so fucking awesome.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, man. Wow, life is suffering. That's deep. I mean, you know, in Buddhism, they talk about suffering is one of the, you know, main noble truths, and how you just can't avoid suffering because that just leads to more suffering. You know, what you resist persists. And yep. you just got to let go. There's this phrase in the psychedelic community, they always, you know, repeat over and over, if for people that are like deep in a trip and they're just kind of like, what's going on? It's like, trust, let go, and be open.
Wow.
It's the same pointer. And with the suffering, right? The symbol of Christianity is a man mm-hmm. nailed to a cross.
Right.
Is the symbol that everyone looks up to.
Crucifixion, yep.
Isn't that wild? And then people wear that symbol, which is a torture device.
Yeah.
But it's a symbol of, it's a deep truth. And that's like, I mean, when I first learned that, I was like, it was like mind blowing to me. Like, how did I not realize that that's what I'm looking at, you know, when yeah. I grew up going to church.
Yeah.
But
how does that blend in with your understanding of spirituality and deeper, you know, spiritual beliefs? Somebody's Christian, believes in Jesus Christ as God and all of that. How does that go with, you know, the other side of the belief, the yin and yang of that? Like, Jesus was a person and he's enlightened, and are there other enlightened people out there and we can learn from them also? Jesus had a message. Many other people did too. You know, there's many truths out there, but it's like, how do you integrate all that? Because there's so much, you know, and you talk to one person that's really into Jesus, he says, man, it's all about Jesus. Anything else is satanic. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second now. You're telling me meditation and, you know, law of attraction and all these things are satanic, you know? So that's what I struggle with, of like, how do you, you know?
So I actually just had a conversation with this buddy I met, Chris. Mm-hmm. And Chris, I can't remember what denomination he is of Christianity. He may just be non-denominational. I don't believe he goes to church because mm-hmm. he feels he doesn't connect with the various churches in his community. Mm-hmm. But we were talking, you know, he's very, very attuned to the Bible, mm-hmm. knows the Bible inside and out. And yep. I think, you know, any Christian who's really serious about Christianity, like the Bible, of course, is the ultimate, right? Mm-hmm. It's the scripture. It's the words in the Bible is the teaching. So we were chatting about, you know, different concepts of Christianity, and I was talking to him about, you know, like Christian mysticism, mm-hmm. which is really pretty esoteric. Mm-hmm. And if you read the translations of biblical scripture from a Christian mystic perspective, it sounds like Zen Buddhism. Mm-hmm. It's very, very similar. It has the same feeling. And, you know, I was talking to him about that and like, how does he, you know, what does he feel about that? What does he feel about the idea that the kingdom of heaven is within mm-hmm. and some of the translations that are more mystical? Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because he was very careful. Everything needed to be supported by scripture, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we came to in the conversation is like, okay, so the idea of the kingdom of heaven and the idea of God or the idea of the Holy Spirit, these are all extremely conceptual, esoteric ideas. And there's scriptures that use those words that have a fairly clear message. But what does that word mean? Mm. What does that concept mean?
Yep.
And there's nowhere in the scripture that says this is God. It's like all powerful, all knowing. There's characteristics like adjectives, but mm-hmm. There's no actual conceptual framework for understanding the entity of God, if you call it an entity or whatever it is. And you could easily take that word and translate it to what some people call consciousness, which is ever, or the present. It's ever present, all knowing, mm-hmm. everything's happening within it. Everything's manifesting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that translation might not resonate with some Christians. But I was fascinated by the idea that, you know, what if you do get down to the nitty gritty of those terms,
mm-hmm.
you know, that opens up a whole possibility. And I think that in that possibility is where we see the bridge between Christian thought and all the other spiritual teachings that are all pointing to the same thing.
Right. Yeah. There's so many similarities. I mean, it's crazy. There's only very few differences. It's just a lot of similarities. So it's like we can focus on the differences. You know, you can anything you look at, you can find the positive in it or the negative, right? So it all depends on your perspective, what you're looking at, how you're viewing it. So why not read the Bible and get the truth from that, and then read the, you know, Quran, and then read the, you know, Lao Tzu from, you know, Eastern, and then read, you know, the Buddhist texts, and, you know, and form your own truth. You know, that's kind of how I view it. And it's a very personal, you know, thing. And for somebody to be like, no, man, you need to look at it this way. It's like, why, what's, you know, why is that coming in from inside of him to be like that, you know, on somebody? It's like something within you that's mm-hmm. need to come out.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think this kind of goes back to the current events that are happening,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, when you label someone, when you label anything as this or that, you put people into a box that says, all of you are like this.
Right.
All of you are like this. It's a conceptual way of looking at reality, which isn't actually true if you're actually present. Mm-hmm. And really, isn't that what God is teaching, is to witness his creation, is to be there and open and present for what's happening, and to look someone eye to eye, and to be with them, be with their being, empathize
mm-hmm.
with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's such a Christian concept, and that's being in the present moment. So when we conceptualize things and we put people into boxes and categories, then we see the huge polarization that's happening now, mm-hmm. where people, you know, once you're labeled as something, then that immediately creates you and other people who aren't like you. So it's an enemy.
Right.
So then there's always this conflicting, right? And I know I've totally fallen into that trap.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to. It's very easy to simplify a situation by labeling someone as a certain thing, and then you just kind of close the book on that, and you just know that, oh yeah, you're this, so I understand everything now about you, and there's no need for me to engage or
right,
you know,
just close off any further thinking about it or analyzing. It's just, you know, like that quote, a mind is like a parachute, it works best when it's open. You know,
it's a good one.
And like, if you're not open-minded, if you're just like, nope, I made my decision, this is going to be, and no more. Like, I love controversial topics. Vaccines. Science is settled. Is it?
Well, that's why there was a really interesting article that I read in the Forbes magazine the other day that talked about how if anybody basically objects to science, that's the current science that's out there, then like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
This guy was specifically communicating about the current situation we have on our hands with the virus that's happening and spreading. And
mm-hmm.
he's basically saying, and the analogy he drew in the illustration that he drew was about fluoridation of water.
Right.
He's like, the fluoridation of water, the science has been established for almost 100 years. So if you question that, then you're part of the issue because you haven't trusted science. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, there's hundreds, if not thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of studies that disprove the concept of fluoridation of water. And we're one of the only, if not the only Western culture that fluoridates their water.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you understand the world in that dimension, you understand that there's some good information in all information.
Right.
So if you can decipher that through your own lens and you're aware of what's transpiring, and I always talk about aware of the funding,
mm-hmm.
then you get a sense of what's happening. And then you can use your own lens, whether it's about your spiritual life, whether it's about the health you want to become, whether mm-hmm. it's about the parent you want to become. There's mm-hmm. some information you can pull from all aspects. You can pull right. information if you're open-minded and create the aspect that you want to create.
Yeah,
I think that's what healthy, conscious individuals do.
What was that thing you told me, Adrian, a couple days ago, where Dr. Shepherd, our homeopathy professor,
uh-huh.
wrote on the board your first day of homeopathy, all the different...
He wrote like microbiology, biochemistry, you know, physiology, whatever. And then he's like, it's all theories.
He said, they're all just theories.
Yeah.
And the idea that the science is settled, like... Yep. We don't even have a unifying theory yet that connects the macrocosm with the microcosm. We don't even know how gravity works. What do you mean the science is settled?
Right. We don't know how gravity works. That's also a theory.
Exactly. Anything.
Yeah.
I think one of the quotes that really connects with me is that the most aware and conscious people understand the more they learn, the more you don't know anything. Don't know.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about any, I think what another word I would use to describe that is you become humbled.
Right.
When you're humbled, you usually become more aware because you're more relaxed and calm about something. And then you can actually embrace what it all has to offer.
Yeah. Well said, man. That's beautiful. I mean, so much going on, and you know, it's easy to get caught up in the noise and the distractions. And it's literally set up that way, you know, attacking your subconscious mind everywhere you go by advertisements, by media, by things just trying to get in and affect the way you live your life. You know, like you notice that with the 10-day meditation retreat that we've both done.
Wow.
They warned you even after when you leave, like, don't go into like a convenience store because it's going to be like overload of colors and sensations and noises. And I made the mistake, and I did. And I was just like, whoa, I felt like I was in the 1700s. And then I just came back to now.
Gosh, sounds intense.
It was so intense, man. And then like driving back, you're just like, you know, and like I told Alex this too, like, it's insane how much I thought about my cell phone during that meditation retreat. And like, I can't wait to turn it on and see my notifications. What the fuck? But that's an addiction, you know, and it came out.
I mean, I had my own addiction the entire time I was sitting. Not the entire time, there's a lot happening, but a huge train of my thought was getting a van and souping it up and just driving west and just living on the road.
Dude, my friend is doing that right now as we speak. He's one of my good friends. He left everything and he bought a van. He's decking it out right now and he's about to just go drive around the country.
I mean, yeah. There's a real deep place in my heart for that.
Yeah.
Nicole and I, my girlfriend, we have high hopes to one day have a van that's, I mean, you see the photos of people who have like, you know, the blanket, you know,
uh-huh.
they have the door popped.
Of course.
And it's like on a lake with a mountain. They have like maybe a guitar, a little fire going. It's
that's
like,
the dream. That's the dream. Yeah.
But it's just fascinating how my consciousness was trying to continuously flee the moment. I mean, it was totally an addictive
mm-hmm.
thought pattern of just like fantasizing about something.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to have dreams and aspirations and goals, right, but right. like I was sitting there
like for hours.
Nothing else matters. Van.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
And I think there is something, it's interesting because my personality, I feel like Alex and I, it's probably why we're good business partners, because our personalities are for sure opposite in some directions.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're the one that first told me about this, is that it's really easy when you become conscious and want to heal yourself, just like want to avoid all of the distractions in life.
Right.
But the true people I feel like that are on your own spiritual healing path is that you can take the knowledge and understanding you have about healing and about that path and actually implement it in society.
Right.
So you're able to overcome those distractions to a certain degree, and you're able then to help serve a lot more individuals because you haven't isolated yourself to a small town in Idaho, which also sounds pretty entertaining to me.
Yeah, no, that's spot on, man. It's like meditation's great. It's easy to be calm and chill when you're sitting cross-legged on a cushion. That's my cushion right there.
Nice.
But what happens when you're stuck in traffic? That's when you take the meditation and, you know, now's the time to be mindful. And just be like, what is there to be upset about? You're in a nice air-conditioned car going to where you need to go. There's a little bit of a delay. Great. More time to listen to the podcast that I'm listening to. That's it. You know, it's about perspective changing. People get so angry and there's like, road rage. It's like, man, just chill.
I mean, that's that practice of just saying thank you. Like, it is as it is. It's such a simple practice. Anytime you're in a line, you're like a little like impatient or you're in traffic or whatever. If you just think to yourself, okay, it is as it is. And then of course you're going to meet resistance immediately. It's like, well, yeah, but this person is driving like an idiot.
Right.
Happens to me all the time.
You know, so like there's something immediately that will come in and be like, no, you deserve to be this pissed.
Right.
Because that person is doing this.
Mm.
Or whatever. So it's just by just asking yourself the question or just making the statement, it is as it is. Like, where's the resistance coming from? And then you immediately get brought to the place where like your pain, you know, your pain, your own imbalances, that it brings you right there,
right
in that moment.
Right.
It's like, that's your work.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I can't accept this because I am blank, right? Conditionality on,
yep,
like, oh well, I'm running late and I can't do that because I'm a naturopathic doctor and I'm never late and it's gonna hurt my reputation, so now I can't accept the traffic.
Yeah,
you know,
or I hate making people wait, it gives me anxiety, like, oh, I don't like to have people wait on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's why I just leave it, you know, half hour early though.
yeah No, I do hate being late though, for real. That is a challenge for me.
Yeah.
And you keep saying thank you, and that reminds me of the very first time I did psilocybin mushrooms, and I was out in a forest preserve, and I was literally thanking the trees for the oxygen they provide. And I was like, wow. Never in my life have I been this appreciative and grateful for trees. And ever since then, every time I see a beautiful tree, I'm like, oh, wow. And I just appreciate it. You know, and Dr. Lou, shout out Dr. Lou, you know, she came over here one time and we did a full moon meditation, and she literally saw this big oak tree. She's like, oh, what a beautiful oak, and went and hugged it. I'm like, that's what I'm talking about.
That's hilarious. The first time that I ever used psilocybin mushrooms, we were also at a forest preserve, and I remember just sitting there watching the wind over the prairie, and it was like amazing scenery. And I was sitting there with one of our friends from school, and remember diving into my own personal fear.
Mm-hmm.
And we just kept on diving deeper and deeper and deeper into fear.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to the bottom of this amazing moment of life, and we just like, wait, what is fear? It's absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
It took us like a 3-hour process to get down this journey of fear, our own personal fears, our fear of exposed to us from our family, so on and so forth. And I do think there's a time and a place for psilocybin mushrooms because it allows the perspective of things that you've never experienced before.
Right.
So that was a profound moment for myself to uncover that fear is something that you have inside your head.
Yeah.
It's literally a man-made.
That's spot on. Beautiful. And have you heard this before? Fear is false evidence appearing real.
That's a good one.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And looking at a tree can do that immediately. It can be, you know, just looking and feeling the presence of a tree, which has been here for 50 years,
at 100, least. Yep.
depending on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, there's a deep, and it's just staying here. It's just here. Mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere. And just looking at a tree can connect you with like, where's the fear? The fear is just a construct, right?
Totally. It's our own mental prison we build for ourselves.
Drop the mic. See you later.
So what else is on your guys' mind? I want to hear more about the business world a little bit. I come from a finance sales background, and I'm now finishing naturopathic medical school. So it's now my job to figure out how to combine these two, all these skills. You know, it's like I felt at first when I started, and we've talked about this, how I'm like, I'm older and I'm just getting into this. And, you know, it was tough for me at first to kind of accept that. And like, I felt like I was old and whatever. I didn't accomplish enough in my life. And like, I realized everything is for a reason. I had to go through all these things to learn all the things I did, to meet all the people I did. I mean, I've worked in 16 different industries in my life.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and I've done 9 years of sales over my lifetime. And it's a lot of skills that I've gotten, and now the naturopathic medicine world, and it's about that combination. So we could talk about this for a long, long time, but what have you guys learned in the business world? What kind of advice would you give someone just starting out if you were giving it to yourself 2 years ago? You know, what's on your mind?
It's a lot. It's a deep question.
I would say for someone who was not business minded at all and actually ignored money consciously,
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want to accept that as part of my reality.
Mm.
Getting into, you know, running a business and having to, you know, communicate on that level to people and take care of systems that, you know, I've never done before.
Mm-hmm.
It's like anything, I think, where, you know, your consciousness leads to the responsibility and the manifestation of what you're doing. And it doesn't matter whether we're living in a capitalistic society or a socialist society,
mm-hmm.
or a fascist society or a totalitarian or an anarchist. At the end of the day, your own consciousness and what you bring to the table is what leads to a greater manifestation in the world.
Yep.
So it's kind of like what you were talking about before with the social media, where it's like it's the yin and the yang of,
mm-hmm.
the dance of what, you know, accepting what is, you know, what is we need to create a sustainable structure, a business structure, to allow our message that we feel like is important to get out to more people.
Yeah.
So that's something that you accept. And the same way that you work on your own self and understand your own patterns, that manifests into the business.
Right.
So it's a really cool process to actually think about it in that way, because it's a whole new world for me.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I would say on a similar note, I know this isn't really like granular information you can take with you, but it's, mm-hmm. like any business problem is a personal problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that our coaches tell us all the time too, is like, if you're looking at your business and there's something about your business that you don't like, it's not happening, you aren't making the money you want, you aren't getting your word out there, what about your own life is the same reflection of that happening?
Yep.
Yep. And I think for anybody who's just, I don't know if any, I'm sure that some of your individuals that are on this are either NDs or going to become NDs, is that, mm-hmm. Understanding and getting really defined of what you want in life is also important.
Mm-hmm.
Many people come out and like, well, I'm just going to practice and I'm just going to be an ND and practice this way. Like, yeah, but you have to be very specific with what you want in life, with who you want to see in terms, right. of your practice. We call that your ideal client.
Right.
And like what your ultimate goal is in practice. For certain people, it's to serve underprivileged individuals for the rest of their life, because that's how they want to serve other people. And that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
For certain people, it's about making X amount of dollars. They have the financial freedom that they can do to practice however they want to practice.
Right.
So, and that's going to be across the board. Mm-hmm. And I think there's, again, like anything in life, it's not right or wrong, but becoming very defined, understanding that, which basically becomes understanding yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Helps you along a certain path, because like anything, you're setting an intent towards a goal. Mm-hmm. You set an intent towards a process, chances of that manifesting is much higher than just saying, well, I'm going to open up shop and just see how it works out. You know,
see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you have to have like in your mind what you want and the potential path to get there, which is never going to be how it actually happens, but it's life.
It's like, I've heard this, somebody say it, not having a goal is like trying to play basketball and not having a hoop. that you're shooting for. You're just kind of dribbling around and you're just like, oh, you don't know what you're going for, you know? So it's important. It's spot on. So are you guys working on some new exciting stuff that you're, you know, what have you been working on?
We have spent a lot of time in the last 4 or 5 months, I'd say, I guess 4 months, mm-hmm. Putting together an online course.
Awesome.
And, you know, we have one of the challenges that Colby and I have had with Haven from the beginning is how to take all of the information that really excites us and that we think is all extremely important to consider when you're healing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much information, right? And we want to just expose people to all of that. So finding a way to take all of the different topics that we're interested in and you know, make them accessible and create a structure to allow people to actually implement them effectively and practically in their lives and feel the effects of how that changes their health.
Awesome.
So the way that we've decided to do that is to make an online course. So we're working on that now. We're recording a lot of videos, you know, creating the copy and everything like that so that we can, you know, try to teach that message. And it's still a work in progress. It's, mm-hmm. it's a challenge. The quote that you said about being an entrepreneur is like putting a plane together after you jump off the cliff.
Right.
Is so true.
Yeah.
'Cause everything is new week after week, because as soon as you outgrow where you're at,
mm-hmm.
then it's like you're in a bigger pond.
Right.
And there's a whole nother learning curve. Mm-hmm. And then you outgrow that. And then there's a bigger pond.
Yeah.
And however you conceive of that growth occurring, it's in multiple planes of consciousness, right? It's like there's a expansion that happens when you're actually aligned with what's occurring.
Right.
With yourself and with your message and you're on your path, there's an expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And that just leads to continuously new experiences.
Yeah, that's exciting. I think the online world's going to be so huge for health and in general, even prior to all of this stuff going on, but now especially. I mean, the convenience of it and just telehealth, telemedicine in general. I just think for a lot of things where you don't need to do a physical exam, or if you're not doing any physical medicine, you just can talk to somebody. I think it's going to be huge, huge. And just the idea that you can have a client anywhere in the world. I love that. Love mm-hmm. that freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And be anywhere in the world yourself as well. And because you're just using the internet. Beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, the accessibility that the internet gives and the access to information, like one of the inspiring things that I've learned is, you know, using the internet like Joe Rogan does or Jordan Peterson or any of these people who basically just put their content available mm-hmm. and they were vulnerable and they taught, you know, something that was maybe different than what you've heard before.
Yep.
And anyone can access that.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's so cool. There's so much potential there. And like, you know, it's so easy to get into the conspiratorial idea of like who's controlling things. And of course, like things are being censored online. So that's a scary thing for sure. Because
yeah, man, #naturalimmunity is blocked on Instagram.
It's crazy.
What is that about? You know, there's a lot of censoring going on. And that's one of the best things about the fact that Joe Rogan gets 190 million downloads a month. And he's by far the biggest media source in the world, I believe. And that's a big deal, you know, and nobody's yep. censoring him. Nobody's, you know, yet, hopefully not. Who knows?
But, and he has so much influence. I mean, this is really the power of like going back to the whole idea of business.
Mm-hmm.
This is the power of like conscious business.
Yep.
Is like, you know, usually you get the really bad perspective. And there's really good reasons for that, because mm-hmm. there's corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're in the stratosphere in your own power, then the way that you can tinker with the system is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a huge issue.
When you're in that billionaire and plus, you know, stratosphere.
Well, and it's more so, I feel like people are just straight up cheating.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, politicians are just opening up the door and letting things happen that like, you know, so if so there's a lot, there's cheating that happens, but it's really cool to you know, see someone like him who, like, he has so much influence. And if they're going to try to censor him, that's going to be really hard, because he, his whole fan base was made, was grew out of him talking about tripping on ayahuasca.
Yeah. And doing, smoking DMT.
Smoking weed on camera during the podcast, saying anything that he wanted.
Yeah.
And speaking people of loved that, it.
Can I get the pen? The pen? Just throw it over. This is gelato from San Diego that I brought back. So cheers to smoking on the podcast.
Cheers. What is the gelato referring to?
That's the strain. It's like a hybrid. It's like a nice balance. It's 87% THC. Wow. So very strong.
Yeah. So I think in terms of that, it's like the way that I've approached it is that, which again, I feel like many NDs, I would say not just NDs, but many service providers, very empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't, they may potentially not value their service or themselves to the point where they're transforming people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
What else is of higher value than that? That's the ultimate value.
Health is wealth.
Yep. And if you don't value yourself, you can't charge what you're worth, and people won't value you and they won't take your words seriously.
Exactly.
So valuing yourself and running a successful business in the end allows for individuals to see the value you can provide and help and serve more people.
Right.
Which is a totally counterintuitive perspective.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about, well, if I charge less, I can help more people.
Right.
It's actually the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you charge more, people value what you're doing more, they take you more seriously, and you can help serve more people to a higher degree.
Totally. Have you heard the story about, there's a newspaper ad, it was a misprint. So it was $100 dress shirt that they were selling, advertising. They accidentally misprinted it and put it as $1,000. They sold out the dress shirt immediately because people are like, $1,000 dress shirt.
Be amazing.
Must be amazing. I'm all over it. And it's just that power of, you know, in marketing, they say perception is reality.
And of course, there's a way to do it consciously, and there's a way to do it so you aren't like unethical about it. So like, you know, you have to be aware about it. So if you can, and that's what I think Alf was saying, is you have to walk down that, you know, path of awareness. But there is something to say about that process. And the more you uncover the psychology of individuals, the more you uncover how you can be successful in business, which is also for me fun.
Yeah.
So all you're doing is you're understanding how individuals tick.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why, you know, any corporation, major corporations have marketing people with psychology backgrounds on staff, you know, because they understand deeply what makes people tick and how to market to them and make them, you know, interested in their product or service.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to think about sales in a way of like, you know, is Eckhart Tolle selling the idea of being present?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
He's standing, I mean, his tactics are unique, and I would say they're very conscious, because he's not, you know, he's not like big into marketing, so to speak, but he is through his own being, you know, selling what he believes is to be the truth, because he feels as if it will help people.
I don't think he's like running ads, you know, like the material selling itself. Like that's how, you know, it's so good and so deep that when I read The Power of Now and A New Earth, I was like, holy shit. This is,
I mean,
amazing.
We could talk about it for so much, because I'm so deep in it right now, but I just, it's just amazing to me that it's something, again, that's so simple that it's easy to just accept it and then forget about it in a second.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, I started thinking again. It's like, that's the whole teaching. It's like, we're constantly thinking.
Yeah.
And to keep going back to that is like, I mean, time just slows. Time doesn't slow down. Time kind of dissolves a little bit. Anyway, to tangent, you know, but that, it's cool to reframe the idea of sales, or just reframe, you know, it's really communicating. It's communicating a message.
Yeah.
And finding the best way to do that makes you a speaker and an influencer and a leader. And someone wants to look up to someone who can take truth and offer it up in a way that that makes sense, and then it's inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, in a lot of my sales, I did a sales minor at DePaul, and when I did my finance, and we talked so much about kind of like sales theory, you could say, and it's like sales is has this negative stigma of like, oh, used car salesman, and oh, pushy, and all this stuff, and people don't want to do it. You know, I don't want to sell. I'm not into selling, and I'm not that type of whatever. And it's really about being a good listener. And understanding what the potential customer's needs are, showing them what you have, illuminating the path for them and say, here you go to walk down this path towards my product or service. If it fits your needs, which I think it might, because I listened really well. Here you go. If it doesn't work, no problem. We'll be in touch, develop a relationship, and maybe in 6 months you'll be ready. Maybe in a year, maybe never. That's okay. Maybe you know five other people that will be ready, you know, and you just, doesn't that make sense? A lot better sounding than, hey, you want to buy this? Like,
yeah, exactly. And with one interesting concept that I, kind of on that similar note, actually, I know it's a little bit off topic, is that when you're communicating to the world, which I find many people in the holistic realm do, and I find myself doing some of this, it's like when you're communicating to someone you meet off the street or at the coffee shop or wherever you're at, you're never trying to get them into your practice, but you're trying to get the five people that they know.
Right.
So when you're communicating about what you do, communicating specifically about who you help serve the best is actually the way to start. So instead of saying, oh, I'm a naturopathic doctor, they're like, oh, what's that?
Right.
Nobody has any idea what that is.
Right.
Say, oh, I help people with chronic illness who are around 30 to 40 who have tried everything else in the alternative and conventional route. I help them overcome their chronic illness by not using drugs. Oh, my Uncle Tom. Yeah, you know, I know him. Or my best friend, Sally. So instantaneously, you have a connection with them that's more a personal connection instead of saying, oh, I'm a holistic doctor. Like, what the hell is that?
Right.
Most people off the street have no idea what that means. You're some quack who uses like energetic touching, which probably works, but you know.
You know, and I mean, hey, Reiki. They do Reiki in hospitals. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Clearly there's something to it. Acupuncture is very widely accepted. They don't understand Western medically how it actually works. There's energy meridians through our body and we put a needle in and it affects it. What the fuck? But it, guess what? It works.
No, man, the science is clear on that.
Yeah.
Science is settled.
Dude, I don't want to hear that ever again. No, but it's what you hear from the... Dr. Jim Sensenig says it so well on the Vital Conversation. It's paradigm views, man. Different paradigm views. You can't communicate across paradigms. It just literally, people don't get it. They can't like compute. They can't, you know, you can't comprehend.
Yeah, that's one of the concepts of finding out who your ideal patient or client is.
Right.
And another way to translate that is finding out who your community is.
Right.
Like everyone needs a community, and it's, you know, typically you want to surround yourself with people that you can, that, you know, you will help yourself in your growth through interacting with them.
It's a mutually beneficial.
Yeah. And to surround yourself with people that are continuously want the best for you and are helping you to grow, you're just connecting with those people and you're just doing that as a service provider, offering a service to those people.
Yep.
So finding out who that community is of people who are going to help you grow and are going to understand your message and you understand them is huge. It's a huge part of, you know, after you graduate, figuring out what you're going to do as a practitioner.
Mm-hmm. You know, one kind of light bulb idea I had when I was just in San Diego, we were hanging out with a bunch of, you know, young entrepreneur type people. They're all in sales. They're all making really good money. We had a really great time and they're asking me, what do I do? And I started talking about it and they're just blown away. And a few of them are just moving to San Diego and they're like, we were looking for a holistic type of a doctor. I'm like, well, perfect. And then I realized like I myself am a young entrepreneur and I feel like that field, that market is so ripe and needs and wants our type of healing and medicine and is just a perfect, you know, target market for me because that's me and I'm helping other people like myself, you know, like the younger, you know, into the similar things. And I also love the idea of, optimizing. Like, you're good, but you want to be excellent, you know, because that's kind of where I'm at. I've been very lucky that and fortunate that I haven't really had any major health challenges in my life, like at all. And so I'm really about keeping it that way and, you know, just getting better and better and better.
I mean, that's the whole concept of the biohacking community.
Right.
You know, you don't typically biohack your way out of a chronic disease. You could, but like,
right.
Very challenging.
You biohack, you know, you biohack to like figure out how to optimize your system, which is a really cool perspective.
Like, I've taken a ton of different nootropics, you know, just tried all kinds of different ways to boost cognition, you know, being through school. And I feel I found some pretty good things that work. Good combinations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Water is a big, big part of it. Hydration. You know, some people at school call me Aquaman because I carry around a glass gallon of water. And it's just, like you said, we're mostly water. So many people are chronically dehydrated every day. They're drinking one or two or three cups of water. And, you know, and I watch them at school. Like, they don't get up ever from the seat to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, I'm going to the bathroom every hour. What's going on here, you know? And then, you know, not to mention just daily hydration only, but water fasting. What a simple yet super powerful therapy. I mean, you guys saw it at True North. I don't have to tell you, but.
I told you that one story, right, where I went to the Autism One clinic or conference.
No.
So the Autism One conference gets some really esoteric doctors and like mm-hmm. really cool cutting edge. Like I saw Kelly Brogan and Sayer G before they were married give they were both keynote speakers.
Awesome. Big fan of them.
Yeah, and like a bunch of other people, but what's the doctor's name who did Restore? Zach Bush.
Uh-huh.
I saw Zach Bush speak and I was so impressed with his message. I know he had a video about coronavirus.
He did.
And a lot of people were really touched by that video. And mm-hmm. I remember when I heard him speak as well at this conference, I was a first try or second try or something.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, this guy is really far out. And I went up to their table after the talk. And I didn't get to talk to Zach Bush, but one of his, you know, employees was there. Hmm. And I was talking to him about Royal Rife and Rife technology because, you know, a lot of Zach Bush's conversation was about the electrical kind of, you know, grid of the body. And the dude said to me, yeah, you know, Royal Rife is cool, but it's still kind of allopathic. You're just like killing bugs. He said, you want to know what the future of medicine is? Water. And he wrote down on his business card, Mei Wan Ho and Gerald Pollack. And both of those guys both those scientists are really far out. Mei Wan Ho, she wrote this book called something about glowworms. She looked at these worms that were, I think, white in color underneath a special microscope that refracts the light in all these different ways. And they were full rainbows. Like, their entire body was a prism that allowed light to pass through the entire thing. So it was lit up like a rainbow. The book was called The Rainbow and the Worm. And through that discovery, it just happenstance. Like, she had the microscope on the right setting and she looked at the worms and they were just lit up. And then she did a bunch of experiments and she came up with this idea of quantum coherence, where our entire bodies are, you know, the molecules, especially the water in our bodies, is lined up in a geometric fashion that allows there to be continuous coherence through the system. And that's, of course, Gerald Pollack's work too. I think that's what acupuncture is tapping into. You're putting needles in energetic points. You could call it fascia or whatever, but it's fundamentally changing the structure of the water and acting as like an antenna. It's bringing vital energy from the atmosphere, which is the same concept as using a Tesla coil.
Right.
You're basically just concentrating energy into packets of batteries in your muscle cells, which are basically structured water, you know? So that's wild. And yeah, I mean, there's so many tangents off of water.
Homeopathy, that's one of the theories on how homeopathy works. It's through the water memory.
Yep.
The water has a memory of the structure of that, you know, remedy, and then it carries it over and over and over, and it just keeps diluting in nanoparticles and just, I mean,
great example of something that, like, we have no idea what's going on there. Does right. that mean it's not real?
Right.
Of course not. But the theory of the water memory is, I think, of all the theories I've heard, makes the most sense.
You know how many allopathic drugs there are that they don't understand exactly the mechanism? I mean, a bunch. And like, I love Dr. Kelly Brogan. She says, you know, allopathic pharmaceutical medicine is like single molecule that's affect this pathway, this, you know, receptor. And it's like trying to pluck the one string of a spider web and thinking the whole rest of the web isn't affected. It's like, come on. Of course it is. And the side effects and all the downstream effects, and then the polypharmacy of all these drugs and how do they interact? We have no idea. Mm-hmm. And then add on to that dehydration and not enough sleep and super stressed out and a bad relationship and terrible diet, and how are you not going to be sick?
I think it's quite amazing when someone comes into our office who've been to so many other doctor's offices
and maybe even the Mayo Clinics and the Cleveland Clinics, and right,
and there's something about their story which is like so obviously a wound or a big imbalance, and like no one actually brought that up with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is wild.
And that's like the key, maybe potentially, to unlocking everything else.
So I think that's the art of becoming a practitioner, is the art of asking questions.
Right.
That's why you're only spending on average of 7.5 minutes with the patient. How do you ask enough questions to get to what's happening? It's very challenging.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit of skill.
Yeah.
Probably not possible.
Right.
Our business coach actually said to the community they were involved with that the next phase in the service industry is going back to referral-based marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Because people want, there's everything's so diluted now online that you don't actually know what the truth is. So it's almost like everything's unknown, mm-hmm. which in some way is maybe what needs to happen to shake things up a bit, even mm-hmm. though it creates discomfort. It's like no one knows. Everything's up for grabs. So people are going to want to work with those who have good results with other people. It's going to be that classic referral system.
Right.
And I think that that's such a big part of the, you know, the healing relationship, is just being able to be present and ask the right questions. And
one of my absolute favorite quotes, a healer does not heal you. A healer holds space for you so you can waken your inner healer so that you can heal yourself.
Beautiful. That's awesome.
You know, it's really, in a nutshell, what's going on, right? I mean, what are you actually doing, and do those things work? Do they help? Of course they do, the diet and the supplements and the whatever. But what about the people that eat all the right foods, exercise, do all the right things, and they're still sick? You've seen plenty of those, I'm sure, too, right? And it's a much deeper, you know?
Yeah, it could be deeper psychologically, or right. it could be just like, because that's our ideal. Our ideal patient is someone who is doing all the right things. They're eating a clean diet. They're doing yoga. They're meditating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're taking supplements, and they're still not getting the results.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be on multiple planes. It's like, sometimes it's like, you're not breathing at all. It's not exactly. even that deep. It's like, you're not even taking a full breath.
Right.
Like at any point.
You don't even know what a full breath is. Have you even expanded your diaphragm fully ever?
I couldn't tell you how many yoga instructors I've seen. I can think of three on top of my head right now that are yoga instructors, and I educate them in the office how to breathe. No idea. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're teaching a class trying to teach you how to breathe, and you can't even breathe.
That's mind blowing. Yeah. That's one of the basic determinants of health, our breath and those belly breaths. And I, you know, shout out to our chiropractic colleagues in DNS, and I'm sure, I don't know the full history of where it came from, but just, you know, belly breathing and just holding on one hand on your stomach, one hand on your chest, and only the hand on your stomach should move. Mm-hmm. Not the one on your chest, like, at all. And we're taught as society to, like, suck our tummies in, and it's just like, that's, you're not getting that deeper, you know, more efficient perfusion happens deeper in the lung, and you're not even getting there all the way down in there. So important. And that's why the breathing techniques, the holotropic breath work, the Wim Hof breathing, all of that stuff is hyper oxygenating the body. And, you know, I remember talking to Dr. Appleyard and being like, do you know about Wim Hof and hyperoxygenation? He's like, physiologically, it's not possible. I'm like, oh, but they're doing it, man.
I have the right person to ask about that.
Yeah, no. And so I just, he looked at me like,
starry eyed. What's this guy on?
I just did not hold back in class, man. I would always just be like, wearing the shirt. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wearing the shirt and be like, did you know there's a cannabis vaginal suppository for menstrual cramps for females? Works amazing. And Dr. Sorensen's like, great. Thanks for sharing, Adrian. You know?
That's awesome.
Yeah. I just didn't hold back, man. I tried to start a cannabis club at the school 2 years ago, you know, to help educate. And people want to know, man. People want to know about the endocannabinoid system and CBD, and patients are asking. So you got to know, right? And the school wouldn't let me. They said, oh, it's too risky. We get federal funding. I said, what? I just went to SCNM in Arizona. They had a psychedelics conference in their campus. Like, they get federal funding too. It's just mindset. Oh. Mindset, man.
If we would have learned anything from, like, the 60s and the 70s.
Right.
People love things that are banned.
Right.
Like, banning something is like, wait, what is that? even if you've never heard of it, if it's banned, you want to find out.
Right. You're curious. It's like, oh, now I want it more.
It's like the button that says don't push. It's like, well, what does it do?
Yeah. Yeah. And so prohibition doesn't work. Look at the alcohol times when that just didn't work. It's harm reduction over prohibition. You know, a perfect example is kids at prom, you know, in high school, they don't tell them don't drink because they know they're going to drink. They tell them don't drink and drive. Be safe about it. You know, it's all about education about how to be safe. If you're going to do MDMA, great, you know, but make sure you're hydrated. Make sure you ate pretty well. Like, make sure you are doing the right things. You know, the day after, take some 5-HTP to help build up your serotonin again. Ideally some vitamin B6 too, because it's a cofactor in there to help build serotonin. You know, you do these things and it makes it a whole different experience than if you just take MDMA, drink a bunch of alcohol, don't drink any water, and you wake up the next day and you're like, what the fuck just happened? It doesn't need to be that way. Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, harm reduction.
And that's one of the reasons why I connected with Andrew Weil. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first people I actually came across mm-hmm. that was into holistic medicine. He's quite famous, so it's no wonder why I found him.
Yep. Did you know he owns True Foods Kitchen?
Yeah.
And he has like 36 locations now. Talk about that for business. And
talk about the best gluten-free, dairy-free pizza that we've had yet in the city.
Nice.
Seriously.
Nice.
It's really good. But he wrote a book called From Chocolate to Morphine.
Uh-huh. I heard of it.
And he basically talked about psychoactive substances and how everything has its place in medicine at the right time, at the right dose, for the right person.
Mm-hmm.
And what an amazing perspective that is. And that I think is really integrative for all branches of medicine. It's like, we can all get behind that idea that mm-hmm. if it's right for the right person, the right dose, you know, it doesn't matter if it's an allopathic drug or a psychoactive substance mm-hmm. or an herb or whatever, if it's at the right dose at the right time for the right person, then it has some, you know, use in medicine. And he really, I mean, Andrew Weil is really cool because he's the one who, you know, talks in a really sensible way about what, you know, how the illegalization of all these psychoactive substances doesn't make sense mm-hmm. when people have these profound or novel experiences. You know, there's no reason why we shouldn't be using that clinically.
Right. And they are starting to now, big time. I mean, Johns Hopkins developed their whole psychedelic research center. They got $17 million in funding, and they just keep getting more, and they're doing all kinds of trials now, you know, including phase 3 clinical trials for MDMA for PTSD for veterans. Yeah. I mean, and it's like curing them.
It's amazing.
Because it allows you to shut down your, you know, or lower your amygdala. So you're less emotional. Like, you don't get overwhelmed by the emotions, but you can talk about the trauma still. It just opens up your heart, man. Just so, it's like perfect for therapy. Mm-hmm. And this is not, oh, come in every week for the rest of your life or whatever. It's three sessions with MDMA and then sessions all in between. And then after that, 60% cure rate. When everything else before that was like 30 at the best or something like that. Like, incredible. So,
numbers don't lie. That's right. Colby and I always say, it's like, it's all about results.
Right.
All of this stuff that we're talking about, it doesn't matter. It's, they're all nice theories.
Right.
But how does it actually change your life? And the only way to know that with some of this stuff is to actually experience it.
Yep. See it for yourself.
That does not lie.
Yeah.
The numbers do not lie.
Like how I told you the other day, how do you describe an ayahuasca experience to somebody that's never done it? You really can't. There's no words. Words are so limiting. They're on this like surface level of like, I don't know. I'm not super good with words. You write really well. I've seen you on Facebook, your posts, and you take some time with it and it's beautiful, but like just the feeling, you know, the feeling of it. It's like they said, it's like an orgasm to somebody that's never experienced it. How do you describe it? You can't. Or being in love. It's really, really difficult. So that's what experiences like this can be for somebody. And that's why it can shake them up so much and, you know, get them to just really see the truth and connect with themselves.
Find the truth.
Right.
Theme of the day.
Yes.
So
yes.
I would love to ask you, because I've never done ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm.
But my, you know, my sense is that, because I've done other psychedelic medicines before, and the feeling that I think those substances gave me was a real, like, strong perception of the now, of what's happening right now. And everything is so unique that it's almost like you're discovering everything for the first time.
Exactly. Childlike.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's like you've never seen this before.
Yes, exactly. Yep. And that is what being present is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I feel in my own life is that this sensation that I get in my body, the perception that I get when I'm really present and I really feel like I'm in it. Like, I'm really not thinking. I'm feeling my inner body. I'm sensing the world around me. When I'm really in that place, it's like a little version of a psychedelic experience.
100%. And they've done fMRI studies on people on psilocybin mushrooms. And I'm sure they're doing it with ayahuasca too. I'm sure it's the same thing. And people that are long-term meditators. We're talking 20, 30 years of at least an hour a day. Meditators, they scan their brains, exact same areas of the brain are lit up. So it's very, very, very similar of an experience. And I got in that 10-day meditation like little glimpses of what I've had in ayahuasca and in smoking DMT. Absolutely. I've had glimpses of like, whew, like you're completely out of your body, you are off in another dimension for sure. Fourth, fifth dimension, sixth, maybe. It's hard to know.
But you do experience that as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's that Buddhism and psychedelics book I showed you, Zigzag Zen. Mm-hmm. They talk about that. All these deep Buddhist like masters are like, oh, yeah, no, we did psychedelic, you know, in the 60s, 70s. Like, sure, we did tons of LSD or tons of mushrooms. And now we're Alan Watts. We got the message, so we hung up the phone. and that's what they do. And then now they're just in that, no thoughts, their body just aware of everything all at once. Have you seen the movie Lucy with
Scarlett Johansson?
Yep.
I haven't.
Really good movie. It's basically a similar idea. And funny name, Lucy is a street name for LSD.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's a coincidence there. Of, you know, and she keeps like raising the level of the percentage of her brain that she's using, like her consciousness, and it keeps going up to 20, 40, 50. And when it gets to 100, she just like disintegrates into just everything.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't ruin the movie, did you?
I might have. Oh shit. No, spoiler alert. Lucy. That's hilarious. But no, it's a great movie. Trust me, it's still worth watching. Just to see the whole experience and what she starts to, you know, perceive, and just like, it's pretty close to I've had multiple people tell me they believe psychedelics have made them more intelligent, you know, just able to connect and perceive different parts of your brain connecting and neurons connecting that might not have otherwise, you know?
I mean, what is intelligence? It's like making connections and
right.
Yeah. I think that's fundamentally what it is.
And not only like IQ intelligence, but emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're using MDMA in studies with social anxiety and autism. I mean, that's a social thing. And at the meditation retreat, I met this guy. It was his sixth time doing the meditation, the 10-day. The first time he went to it, he said he had severe social anxiety, and he got out of the 10 days and it was completely gone.
Wow.
And the guy that started the meditation retreat, you know, Goenka, he said he had severe cluster headaches. Yep. He was a wealthy Indian businessman. He went all over the world, different doctors, couldn't find anything to help. Somebody said, hey, why don't you try meditating? So he did this 10-day meditation thing that the way that the Buddha did, mm-hmm. and never had a cluster headache again.
Wow.
So these psychosomatic things, I mean, the mind body.
I was telling you before we jumped on here that the first book that really opened my eyes up to spirituality and consciousness was Be Here Now by Ram Dass.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think a lot of people our age can connect with going to college and taking acid,
mm-hmm.
you know, probably like some of our parents, maybe not all of our parents, but a lot of us have. And there's definitely something that happens when you do it, have a psychedelic experience like that, that makes you question what you've been taught.
Right.
And makes you question whether what, you know, people are saying is actually the truth. And it opens your eyes up to a whole nother realm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ram Dass's story is that he was taking massive doses of acid with Timothy Leary when he mm-hmm. was a psychology professor at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing experiments where they would stay in a house for 2 weeks and they would dose themselves every 4 hours for that entire 2 weeks.
That's right.
Which is just like crazy, crazy heavy. But he, you know, he describes it the same way, where you're tapping into another realm and you're trying to discover that. It's like pure discovery at some level.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he always came down from the high, right? So it opened his eyes to something, but he always came down. And he ended up going to India and found this, it was a Westerner, I believe, a white Westerner who was like deep into meditation in India, who brought him to his guru. Mm-hmm. And when he met this guy, he was like, is there something that you want to ask me? And he gave him the acid. He was like, what is this?
It was like a 900 microgram dose, which is like 9 times the original dose of like a one hit.
Like, yeah, he basically, the guru held his hand out. This is Dr. Liu's guru, by the way.
Baba Neem Karoli?
No.
Ram Dass's guru, right? That older Indian guy?
Yeah, I thought his name was Maharishi or something.
Or Maharishi. I'm sure that's in there too somewhere. They have sometimes, you know,
Forms. Right. But that is Dr. Liu's guru as well. But anyway, he held his hand out and he put like, you know, his strong dose in, and then he wanted another one and another one, and he ate it.
Yeah.
And Ram Dass said that he watched him all day, because he basically, you know, his day job was basically sitting on a wooden bench with a blanket wrapped around him, and people would come to his feet and like, you know, just want to be in his presence,
right,
and interacting with him all day. That was what this guy did. And he said that he watched him all day, and there was not one single thing in his behavior that suggested that anything had changed whatsoever. And the only thing that he witnessed was at one point he looked over at Ram Dass and he gave him a little wink.
I just love it. I mean, what does that say, man? That's just his everyday normal consciousness. Just no change.
It's hard to even comprehend what.
Did take him somewhere, but he's like, oh yeah, no problem, I get here all the time by myself. Like,
or it's just like the changing of the present, And once you're in the present, things come up. And if you're grounded, yeah. it doesn't matter if you get in a car accident or you're on 900 micrograms of acid. You're just like, this is what it is.
Yeah. Wow. Deep. Deep. Ram Dass, man. Yeah, he just recently passed, unfortunately.
You told me that.
Yeah. A few months ago. Yeah. Okay, so what else, guys? Anything else on your mind? Are there closing thoughts here? It's been awesome having you. We've gotten deep. I mean, we can go so deep on so many more topics. We just scratched the surface on a couple, but we could always have a you guys come out to San Diego and record session.
You got to get that that recording studio set up.
Yes.
Oceanside, right?
Oh, wow. I love that. Love that idea. Yes, sir.
Well, thanks for having us, man. It was really enjoyable.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, guys.